Good afternoon. This is Joyce Russell. We're live from the Law Library at the Iowa State House. And this is River to River on Iowa Public Radio. Iowa educators would like to see the penny sales tax continue past 2029, and lawmakers are currently considering whether and how to extend the tax. Today we're going to be talking to lawmakers and the superintendent of Des Moines Public Schools about the history and the future of that penny sales tax. But first, we're going to talk with State House reporters about the ongoing budget negotiations and what's left to be decided on this session. Have you been following the legislature this session? Are you happy with the things they've passed? Upset that certain proposals have died? To join the conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk, message us on Facebook, or email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're joined now by Bill Petrosky, a longtime reporter for the Des Moines Register. Hello, Bill. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Joyce. Glad to be here.
And Radio Iowa News Director Kay Henderson. Thanks so much, Kay.
Joyce, I can answer that, yes, I have been following the legislature.
I would hope so. Well, and you know, there's always politics to talk about when you're going to talk about the legislature, but we're going to take a little detour and talk about something that was purely political. Both of you just came out of covering the district GOP conventions, where they chose 12 of the 30 delegates to attend the National Republican Convention.
And by the way, four of those delegates are state legislators, Republicans who supported Ted Cruz.
Okay. And I understand it was a big day for Ted Cruz. Tell us about that, Bill.
Well, I think the Ted Cruz folks were very well organized, and that showed in the I know that I talked with one person who was at the convention, and he told me that at 6 o'clock on Saturday morning, he got an email or a text message from the Cruz folks, and it had a big slate of delegates. This is who to vote for, and there was a lot of other work happening there. Now, the Trump people were there, and they did want to get support from people, but they weren't, I don't think they were anywhere well near as well organized.
And just to clarify, according to rules from the Iowa Republican Party, when these 30 folks go to the Republican National Convention, they are duty bound to cast all of those ballots for Ted Cruz because he won the Iowa caucuses.
No, it will be apportioned. So
Cruz will get a section
on the very first ballot.
That's right.
Cruz will get some delegates. Trump will get some delegates. Even Mike Huckabee will get some a delegate.
Okay,
because
right.
of the way they're apportioned. This happened because of what happened in 2012 when Iowa's 30 Republican right. delegates went to the National Convention in Tampa, and 23 of them voted for Ron Paul, which was wholly disproportionate given the results of the Iowa caucuses.
Okay, so in the first round of voting, the chair of the Iowa Republican Party is going to get up and he's going to say, Iowa cast so many delegates for Cruz, so many delegates for Trump, and then on down the line, down to Mike Huckabee. So when we say that Ted Cruz had a good day on Saturday, we're really talking about how people are going to vote in the second round of balloting, right?
Indeed. And it was wholly evident to everybody in the room in Fort Dodge. Bill and I both covered the 4th District Convention in Fort Dodge. Delegates seated at the convention were yelling at people giving speeches, tell us who you're going to vote for. They wanted to know if these people will be Cruz people on the second ballot. And for instance, Jason Schultz, who is a state senator from Schleswig, was the first to speak. And he said he will be Trump on the second, third, fourth, and however many ballots it takes for Ted Cruz to become the nominee.
You said Trump, you meant Cruz.
I meant Cruz.
So right. as they came up, everybody gets up and gives a speech. And so every one of them was pretty much forced to say who I'm going to vote for on the second ballot.
Some of them did say, I'm just going to vote for the best candidate or for what the party wants or for what the people wants, and that didn't go over very well. Now, also, they chose people to be on the nominating committee, which is a big deal, too. And at Fort Dodge, one of the people was a Cruz person. The other person was more of a neutral person, Mark Lundberg, the Sioux County chair, but he was a strongly supported by Steve King, who is supporting Cruz.
That's and right. For party more party minutiae, the reason these two people that were elected in each of the four districts, those eight people are getting together this coming Saturday, and they're going to come up with a slate of the 15 other people that they will recommend be Iowa delegates going to the national convention. One of those 15 people, our governor hopes to be one of those 15 people. And this morning in a meeting with State House reporters, he refused to say who he would support on the second ballot.
Well, does that mean, is it actually possible that he would not be elected a delegate just because he wouldn't say who's going to vote? I mean, would that be unprecedented that the governor wouldn't be a delegate?
Let's take a look at these eight people who are on the nominating committee. If they are rabid Ted Cruz supporters, they want to see Ted Cruz as the nominee. Let's go all the way back to January 25th of this year when Terry Branstad said he wanted to see Ted Cruz, quote, defeated in the Iowa caucuses. They're not going to be terribly interested in helping the governor be a delegate.
I think you're right, and especially since just a matter of a few votes could be a crucial situation at the convention.
And from a reporter's standpoint, gosh, I hope that Terry Branstad and Steve King are both delegates. They both want to be delegates. And we would like to see that fight play out between the two of them that's been going on behind the scenes. It would be on the floor in full display of the national media if they are both delegates at the convention.
Okay. Well, then the other issue that will be was addressed and will continue to be addressed, we've all heard that at the Republican National Convention, they could rewrite the rules and in effect open the door for somebody who has not, like a Paul Ryan or a Mitt Romney, to become the nominee. But it would take a vote of all the delegates in order to change the rules. And as I understand it, the Iowa delegation has promised not to do that. In other words, they're not going to be, if that happens, they're not going to be a part of it.
That's exactly right. There was a lot of talk about that up at the 4th District, and there was a lot of opposition. We heard a number of people say, okay, I'm for Cruz, but I would rather have it just be either Trump or Cruz, and if it's Trump, well, they'll go out, well, at least some of them will go out and support Trump. This idea of having somebody come in from left field, they don't like that. But I did hear a number of people say, boy, I like that John Kasich.
I interviewed Jeff Kaufman, the chairman of the Iowa GOP, a month ago, and he said this effort to have someone else as a Paul Ryan or some other white knight on a white horse riding in at the last minute is the fancy of a group of people he refers to as sore losers. And he said he will not have any part of it, and he said he will be a vocal opponent should people try to change the rules and have someone other than Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, or John Kasich nominated.
Right. I think that would just be disastrous to a party.
Well, lots of interesting politics to watch as that plays out. Now, on to this year's legislative session. What's left to do? Bill, what kind of conflicts are going to be playing out here in the next 10 days or more?
You know, I think their work is practically done, to be honest with you. I think they've waded through almost all the policy bills that they are about to do, and the big thing left is the budget, and they have most of the budget done. They're due to adjourn a week from tomorrow, and I think that is looking like a very strong possibility. They've agreed on all of the big pieces of the budget, leaving a whole lot of smaller things to do. The budget chairs have been meeting here, the Republicans and Democrats, in an effort to iron things out. And a lot of those final pieces, what I think they're going to be, a status quo from last year.
The big decision they have to make, the House will start debating that this evening or maybe late this afternoon, what to do on water quality. House Republicans have their own proposal. Senate Democrats have indicated that they will unveil their own proposal, alternative plan, sometime this week. So it remains to be seen whether in this rush to adjourn that the two parties can agree on doing something, anything, on water quality.
I think the one thing that I have heard from some folks is we would rather have no bill than to have a bad bill. That's especially what you hear from the education lobby groups. They don't want anybody scooping school infrastructure money to use for water quality. And some of these other bills that are proposed by the Republicans, there's a lot of opposition to it from the Democrats, are viewed as moving money around and ultimately taking money from education.
The other group in opposition to the House GOP plan that will be debated this afternoon is the state's construction industry, because it diverts money from a special state fund into which state gambling taxes are deposited, a fund which is supposed to be used for infrastructure. House Republicans are proposing to use part of that money for water quality initiatives, and the state's construction industry is unhappy.
And one of the key things here is that I think if you asked a lot of Democrats privately and a lot of education people privately, they would tell you what they would really like to see is some type of a tax increase. The idea of a 1 cent increase in the sales tax is something that was essentially backed by voters in 2010 when they approved a constitutional amendment for this type of thing, but it's never been implemented. And the Republicans say, hey, we just agreed to create a fund. We did not agree to raise the taxes. And none of the Republicans, haven't heard a single Republican David Johnson from Ochiden, exactly, say that they are in support of a tax hike.
So am I safe to say that, well, we're all talking about the fact that Republicans don't want to raise taxes in order to fund water quality. Democrats want to raise the 3/8 cent and have that a constitutionally protected fund.
At least some of them do, that's for sure.
And there have been some other things thrown on the table. Ralph Rosenberg, a former legislator who's now the executive director of the Iowa Environmental Council, has suggested a fee, a clean water fee on water bottle purchases in the state of Iowa. Money would be raised from that in the tune, something in the range of $25 to $28 million, and using that money for water quality. So people are starting to throw out other ideas of quote-unquote fees, as opposed to calling it a tax.
Exactly. And what one of the things that I keep hearing is that a lot of folks say, hey, a lot of this problem is caused by farmers, and farmers should be paying for it. The rest of the taxpayers shouldn't be bailing out the farmers, and people in Des Moines are paying for this. The one thing that I see here is that everybody wants to say that they tried to do something before the legislature adjourned. Rural legislators are under pressure because of this lawsuit by Des Moines Waterworks. You know, Branstad wants to do something. He recognizes he doesn't want to leave office in 2 years having not done anything to address this. And Democrats recognize that it's an issue, too.
It does seem to have reached the level of a political imperative for them to do something about water quality this year. What I'm looking forward to hearing in the debate on the bill in the House is some bits of policy and not just where you're going to get the money. And there, as those various ideas for raising the money were being debated in committees, you had Democrats and Republicans raising their hands and saying, okay, well, how are we going to use this money? Are we we're throwing money at this?
The other thing that came up in the hearing to which I think you're referring, Joyce, is you had groups saying, how will you measure if what you're spending is actually cleaning up the water? Mm-hmm. And there's very big pushback against that. In fact, Representative Pat Grassley from New Hartford, the grandson of Senator Chuck Grassley, who's been sort of leading part of this effort to find ways to finance water quality initiatives, says, well, you just can't stick a cup in the water and measure it. It will be interesting to see what sort of measurements they agree to, because I think that's key. Even urban Republicans want to see some sort of measurement as to, you know, we spend $300 million on this. Has it cleaned up the water?
Right. And one thing that Branstad has pointed out is that this is intended to be non-point and point source solutions. So we're talking about not just rural water issues, but you're also talking about cleaning up industrial things, municipal things.
Right. Okay, so water quality is one thing that's still out there. I'm not getting the feeling that that would necessarily delay the session, but I guess that it could. Medical marijuana is another unresolved issue. A bill to allow the manufacture and distribution of medical marijuana in the state. That bill has gotten scaled way back from the initial hopes, scaled way back from what the Senate passed last year. Medical marijuana has kind of been a 2 years ago when they passed the very limited cannabis oil bill for children with epilepsy, that was literally passed in the middle of the night. What are the prospects for this medical marijuana bill?
The most interesting thing that's happened on this issue is that Republicans held a several hours long private discussion about this last week. It will fall or pass based on how House Republicans decide to proceed. And it's unclear at this moment what they're deciding. You have House Speaker Linda Utmeyer, who has repeatedly said the state of Iowa should not be in the business of deciding which prescription medications should be dispensed and distributed in Iowa. This is a decision on medical marijuana that should be made at the federal level. She also brings up the prospect of the country getting a new president who might say, hey, we're going to crack down on states that are allowing marijuana for medical use, and in the case of a couple of other states, recreational use.
The bill is currently in the Ways and Means Committee, mm-hmm. and the chairman of that committee, Representative Tom Sands, is also saying what you just said. This is, should be a federal issue. You can tell that in his gut he does not want to pass a medical marijuana bill, but he says, and I believe him, he says his caucus is truly divided.
Here's the thing to understand about this. When this cannabis oil bill passed a couple of years ago, it was deader than a doornail. It was not right. It was not going to pass, period. The Republicans had already decided that it wasn't going to pass. But the people who were in support of it, they were relentless. They lobbied and lobbied and lobbied and lobbied. And wouldn't you know, as you mentioned, in the middle of the night, the bill appeared out of the middle of nowhere and it passed. That's still possible. Mm-hmm. I would say that the odds are kind of against it, but nothing would surprise me on this, and you've seen the governor bend, I think, quite a bit. You know, the concern here, the bottom line concern by a lot of Republicans, is that ultimately this would turn into a recreational marijuana, a vehicle to get recreational marijuana. That is the bottom line concern of a lot of folks. But this bill, I would definitely not say that it's dead.
And Representative Sands says he's hearing from all of those people, all the way from the most limited use all the way to the folks who want recreational marijuana. Another unresolved issue is oversight for the state's new privately managed Medicaid program. Both the House and Senate have put out proposals there. Kay, what's the difference between those two approaches?
Senate Democrats want to create a new mechanism by which to review the progress or lack thereof of this project. They would establish a new working group, set some standards, whereas the plan that Republicans in the House proposed last week is more about the data and making the data available. There's no standard set about if we get data that shows us X, then the state needs to perform Y. There's nothing in it in that regard, but it is calling for a more robust release of data from not only these three private companies that are managing the Medicaid program, but from federal officials who oversee it.
What I sense from hearing from the folks from the Senate is that, number one, they're just relieved that the House Republicans did anything. And the fact that the House Republicans recognize that this is an issue, they recognize that they want to have accountability, that leaves some room for negotiation and some the potential that there will at least be some type of bill. Because we were in the situation here where it looked like there was possibly going to be no special oversight.
And actually, Governor Branstad has said something to the effect that the companies themselves will provide the oversight. Well, that made critics of the modernization plan that made them crazy. So will the governor go along with whatever they come up with?
He has recently said last week that comment was made in the context of hiring dozens more state ombudsmen to be point persons in state government for Medicaid patients to complain about their care or lack thereof. And has seemed to sort of weaken or at least soften his opposition to the idea that he might accept some sort of proposal to stiffen state oversight. The thing that worries not only Senate Democrats, but some House Republicans, is they intend to shove this proposal on oversight in a budget bill. And for those of you unfamiliar with state law, the governor can item veto things out of budget bills. So there's some concern that whatever agreement they come up with on oversight of the Medicaid managed care program will get item vetoed by Terry Branstad.
It's happened in the past. Another issue that's out there is the renovation of the State Historical Museum. That seemed like a pretty straightforward thing. It's so many years old, it needs renovation. Mm-hmm. Why has that turned out to be controversial?
Oh, it is anything but uncontroversial. Number one, that building, when it was completed, it's been a disaster since day one. It's had all sorts of problems with leaks and cracking facade out there. But what's become intertwined with this is the renovation of the Wallace State Office Building, which houses about 600 state employees. That building is even older than the State Historical Building, and it's been plagued by what a lot of people say is sick buildings syndrome. And a couple of years ago, the legislature approved money to get that building, move the people downtown while it was completely rebuilt from scratch. Like I said, it's had many structural and mechanical problems ever since it's opened. Branstad vetoed that and said, hey, our priority is rebuilding the historical building. So what's happened is he has come forward with a major plan to rebuild the historical building, leaving not a penny for the Wallace State Office Building. And the Democrats say, let's do both. Let's bond for them.
The governor got sort of I won't say a yawn, but I think legislators were a bit surprised by the private fundraising component of this entire plan to redo the State Historical Building. They also sort of chafe at the idea that this is going to be a welcome center to the Capitol, or that it will continue to be, the site of wedding receptions. They think that that might not be the best use of the state's flagship history museum.
Okay, well, we're just about finished with our half hour. Is there anything in the budget itself that now has the potential for dragging out the session, Bill?
Well, the number one thing we've heard all along is that what one of the things that might happen right at the end is an effort to defund Planned Parenthood. There are some pro-life Republicans, anti-abortion Republicans, who have been saying all along, this is something that we want to fight for at the end.
And it's happened before.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Coming up in the next half hour, if you have questions about the penny sales tax for schools, give us a call at 866-780-9100 or tweet us at IPR Talk, message us on Facebook, or email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Bill Petrosky and Kay Henderson, thank you so much.
Thanks, Joyce.
It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Joyce Russell. We are live in the Law Library at the Iowa State Capitol. We're going to be talking about that special penny sales tax for schools that schools use for infrastructure and property tax relief. And there have been some different ideas out there about what to do about that penny sales tax for schools. Maybe you have a question or comment. If so, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, message us on Facebook, or email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to hear first from Thomas Ahart. He's superintendent of Des Moines Public Schools, and we're going to talk to him about how his school district uses this money. Hello, Mr. Ahart. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, nice to be here, Charity.
This is Joyce.
Joyce, I'm sorry.
It's all right, you can't see us. It's okay. Okay, well, this penny sales tax for schools raises quite a bit of money for Des Moines Public Schools. Tell us about that and tell us how your district relies on this money for building needs.
Well, in Des Moines, we have some beautiful buildings in our district. But they tend to be old. Our district is over 100 years old, and the average age of our school buildings is over 65 years old. And those buildings then bring some challenges to us that perhaps some other places don't have. So One of the big areas of focus that we've had since the SAVE has been in place is improving the energy efficiency of our buildings. So we've taken a number of measures around the district to improve the energy efficiency and the environmental impact of our buildings. And this year, as a matter of fact, marks the fifth consecutive year that we've been named a national EPA Energy Star Partner of the Year by the EPA. We were the first district in the country to win that award, and we've gotten it five consecutive years, despite having very old buildings that that we still have in service. So that's one area that, that we've utilized the SAVE. And important to note also in that, that energy efficiency discussion is we now have 100% of our classrooms air conditioned. And while we have improved learning conditions through that, we've also saved a significant amount of ongoing energy expense, which frees money up from our general fund that normally would have gone to utilities that we've redirected to directly impacting our students. Another priority for us with the SAVE is improving the security of our buildings. Again, the vintage of our buildings, most of our buildings were built in a time when the expectation was that most students walked to school, and the buildings were designed to be very open to the public and to the community. And as we all know, since Columbine and even a little bit prior to that, we've really had to relook at the openness of our buildings and make things much more secure. So we've added secure entries to most of our buildings. We've added hundreds and hundreds of security cameras and the computer servers that that make those cameras functional. We've improved pick-up and drop-off areas at our buildings where, again, because of the vintage of the buildings and most of the students originally walking to school and now are being bused or transported by a vehicle, some of our buildings weren't set up to safely deal with those issues. So those are two big areas, safety, security, and energy efficiency, where we've expended a great deal of our resources through SAVE.
SAVE, I'm going to jump in here. SAVE is the name of the fund that the sales tax goes into.
Statewide penny, okay. That I'm used to calling it.
All right.
And then additionally, what we've done is we've gotten rid of almost all of our mobile classrooms, which are among other things, eyesores, but also pose additional security and efficiency concerns. We have almost all of those gone from the district. And then we've also added new space in a variety of areas responding to increases in enrollment. And then finally, I guess what I would add are two other sort of associated areas. Technology is a huge need for us, and so we continually invest a good portion of our statewide penny dollars in improving our technology infrastructure and also in our instructional technology that we make available to our staff and students. And I think that just about covers most of our primaries.
Okay, great. Now, the penny sales tax doesn't expire until 2029. That's a few years out. So tell me why it's important to you that the tax gets extended now.
Well, what we have done and many other districts have done is bond against our expected revenues. And the reason that we've done that is, number one, we can avoid inflationary costs for projects that are on in our plan. So if we can execute something this year instead of waiting 5 years down the road, not only do we improve the learning circumstances for our students more immediately, we also avoid costs associated with inflation. So we've been able to, we had lots of need. We still have a lot of need, not as much as we did when at the inception of the statewide penny, but we've been able to move more quickly to catch up on, in some cases, deferred maintenance, and in other cases, just needs that hadn't been met. And then the changing dynamics of different programming, especially at the high school level, that we want to provide our students in reaction to our changing economy and job market. So we've been bonding against those dollars. Because of that, we now in FY16, which we're just about wrapping up, we're closing out the first year of our current five-year facilities plan for the statewide penny, and we have bonded. We'll actually bond one more time this early this summer, late this spring or early this summer, and that will speak for the rest of our anticipated revenues through 2029, and will allow us to complete our current five-year plan. So we're in year one of a five-year plan. So by 2020. Will essentially be out of that resource.
And so if
revenues coming in from 2020 to 2029, we'll actually be paying off our bonds.
Okay. So if the legislature doesn't extend that this year, you will either have to just leave these, any additional projects, leave them on the table, or you'll have to use some other funding source.
Right. And really what that means is we'll leave them on the table. We really don't have another funding source, or really only the only other way that we can address these meaningfully address these technology and facilities needs is through the physical plant and equipment levy that most people refer to as the PEPL, and we do not have the fully approved voter approved PEPL. We could actually go to our voters and ask for an increase in that, but that translates directly into local property tax increase. And we've been working very hard to ensure that we keep the property tax levy generated by the school district flat, not increasing it, if at all possible. So in the event that we had some issues that we had to address, minus what we now have in the statewide penny, we would either be forced to go to the voters and increase the property tax levy through PEPL, or another locally property tax funded avenue would be actually a general obligation bond to fund those projects.
Okay. Well, we have a caller, or rather a question on Twitter, and whether this money should be used for anything but school infrastructure, and we'll get to that in a minute. But at first, I want to bring on Senator Herman Kornbach, a Democrat from Ames, who's going to give us a little history on this tax. Initially, individual localities, jurisdictions, voted this penny sales tax on themselves, and one by one, counties and local jurisdictions approved this. It was so popular that at one point then the state stepped in and made it a statewide tax. Tell us about that. What were the reasons for changing it from a local tax to a state tax?
Well, Joyce, you've just done a great job at summarizing the history very compactly. Yes, it was in 1998 that the legislature adopted the School Infrastructure Local Option, SILO. That's how you get the name SILO. That was a county option tax. So any county in the state could decide through a popular referendum whether or not to impose that tax on itself on sales within the county. Slowly, year by year, more and more counties adopted it until in 2007, we got all 99 counties that had adopted it. The next year, in 2008, the state legislature stepped in and said, well, as long as all of the counties have adopted it, now we're going to take this statewide. And that allowed us to do one very important thing. It allowed us to redistribute the money a little bit according to a better formula. Rural districts that had very little in the way of retail weren't generating very much at all in the way of sales tax. Now, if you take it statewide, then you can redistribute the funds on an equal per pupil basis in every district across the state. So that was very important. I think it very much improved the program. But I think that we need to be true to the origins of the program, which is to say it was a county by county voter approved tax. They said, we're willing to tax ourselves if the money is used to pay for school infrastructure. And I think we need to be true to the original mandate from the voters.
And I understand that at that time, I've heard people talking about this, that there was some resistance in 2008 for this very reason, that people were reluctant to do this because they could see that this would be money out there that then could be scooped.
Well, yes, I think that there is always that concern. You know, last year when we put an extra dime on the gas tax, one of the things that led to a lot more approval of that, acceptance of it, let's say, is that people knew that that money was going for a specific purpose, for roads, for transportation. I think that the same kind of political dynamic exists here. People approve this for school infrastructure, and I think we need to be true to that. We need to maintain our credibility with the voters.
And am I right that when this was approved in 2008, in order to prevent this eventuality of using it for something else, it would require a two-thirds vote of the legislature to change that, right?
Well, the law may say that, but of course, we can always change what the law says. So I think we just have to maintain our political discipline on this. The voters approved it for a specific purpose. And that's what I think we have to be consistent with.
We have Amy on Twitter says, the citizens voted yes for the money to be spent on schools. If the money will be spent elsewhere, people should vote on it. Reallocation is unacceptable. I'm going to direct that comment to you, Representative Matt Winchittle. Thank you for joining us, Representative Winchittle.
Thank you for having me.
Representative Winchittle has sort of been the point person in the House for bills to address this penny sales tax for schools. At one point, Representative Winchittle, you concluded that the governor's idea to put it at, to extend the tax and to capture some of that for water quality, you kind of made the decision that that was just not going to fly, right?
I didn't make the decision unilaterally. We need to back up here for just a moment. I agree with Senator Quirenbach that the voters approved this this penny for school infrastructure, but it wasn't just school infrastructure. The original vote was to have it for school infrastructure and local property tax relief. So that's how voters understood it, and that's what they voted on. That's still the intent of that penny now, is school infrastructure, local property taxes. I'd like to answer the Amy, I believe, her question. That is part of the dialogue that we're having now, is that if we're going to change the intended purpose of this penny, if we're going to use it for something else, if we're going to expand it for educational uses or just use it for something else entirely, that is part of the discussion that, yeah, maybe voters need to go back and vote on this again. Because keep in mind, when this first passed in 1998, voters got told that they would be able to reauthorize it every 10 years. Well, when we came in 2008, we completely changed that. We took the opportunity for the voters to be able to reaffirm that tax away from them, and we put it at the sole discretion of the legislature. So we have to be cognizant of that. Voters had an option out there. We took it away from them, and now we need to be wise stewards with this dollar, or with these pennies and how these dollars are spent.
Well, I didn't mean to misrepresent your role in the failure of Governor Branstad's proposal to extend the tax and capture some of the growth for water quality. But you were in a position to make a decision that that was not going to go. I mean, it wasn't your decision, but you could see that that's where it was headed, and then you have come forward with some other ideas for the tax.
Well, I wouldn't call the governor's proposal a failure. I mean, he's brought water quality to, he's elevated it to an actual issue that we're talking about in both the House and Senate right now. So was his proposal bold? Yes. Is it something that I agreed with? Not necessarily, but that's just part of the process we have down here, is people have different ideas, and we're trying to address not only school infrastructure and what we do with this penny, but also what we're doing with water quality.
Well, I want to agree with Representative Winchettle with regard to the use of SAVE to help hold down property tax. In fact, it does that three ways. First of all, there are school districts which have issued bonds in the past that would be repaid with property tax dollars. You can use the SAVE dollars to replace the property tax dollars, so you get to reduce your property taxes there. Second thing is, if you have to issue new bonds for new construction, you can use the SAVE dollars there instead of going to the voters and asking for more property tax dollars. And the third thing is, if a school district, and this is local, you know, this is local control here, if a school district doesn't have a building program, building projects that they need to have done, then the SAVE dollars go directly to property tax relief. So three different ways the SAVE dollars are being used to lighten the load of property taxes. If we scoop SAVE dollars for something else, that would in fact be a property tax increase.
Ah, but yeah, I could also make the same argument that if we extend the SAVE penny past 2029, some people, the argument can be made that that would be an increase in taxes on those voters past 2029 as well. That's part of the discussions that I'm hearing back home in a very conservative district, is that folks want to make sure that we're not just carte blanche extending a sales tax penny.
And why would you call that a tax increase if it's
because
if
the legislature does nothing, if we do nothing, it's already written in law that the chapter will automatically be repealed, and so you would in essence be repealing a 1 cent sales tax across the state. That's why.
Okay, so you and maybe your constituents feel like extending it is really a tax increase.
No, I wouldn't say that I feel that way. I'm saying that's part of the discussion. That's how some people are looking at this. And so we need to continue that dialogue to find out if voters want us to continue to collect this sales tax and use it for its two original purposes, or if they'd like us to change it or broaden it for other things. I think that discussion needs to happen outside of the Golden Dome here and out on the campaign trail and in the communities that we all represent. I think Iowans need to be able to have a voice on that and express their opinion on how those dollars should be spent in the future.
Well, Representative Winschittle, you have sponsored or at least managed a bill to extend this sales tax and use it for other things than its initial purpose. Tell us about that.
What bill are you referring to?
I believe you had a bill in the Ways and Means Committee that dealt with this and appropriated that money for something else. Am I wrong?
There are three bills that are in Ways and Means. I did not individually sponsor any bill. There's a House study bill that Ways and Means started. There's also a bill that came out of the Agricultural Committee and a bill that came out of the Education Committee. All deal with saved dollars in one form or another. The Education Committee had a bill that would have expanded the uses for school transportation and also to cover the district cost per pupil inequity that we see in across the state, including in my own district. I am the chair of all three of those subcommittees. We've had extensive discussions on those, but we have not moved anything forward. If you see, for everyone out there that can't see what I've got in front of me, I've got a whole file here that is full of ideas that I've taken from different folks within the education community, but also just average everyday citizens who would like to see some changes made or maybe these dollars appropriated in a different fashion for education purposes. That's an ongoing discussion. No definitive decision has been made. So I have not personally advocated for using the dollars for something different. I'm merely chairing the subcommittee where that discussion is ongoing to find out what the right path forward is.
Okay. Well, you mentioned two things. One is for school transportation, and then district cost per pupil inequities, which is something that we've been hearing about in recent years. Do you think that there is more justification for using this penny sales tax for schools for these other school needs rather than for water quality? I mean, it still violates the understanding that people had when they voted for it. But do you think that that would be an easier sell than using it for water quality?
I wouldn't say there'd be more justification for it, but again, I would say we need to take that back to the voters. We need to have that conversation in our forums. We need to have it when we're walking in parades. We need to have it when we're knocking on people's doors and ask them how they want us to use those dollars. So even though it's still housed under the umbrella of education, whether it's district cost per pupil or transportation or some other inequity that's out there, voters still voted on the two original purposes, school infrastructure, local property tax relief. Before we make any changes, the voters need to be able to speak to us about that and have their opinions heard. It's their dollars.
Well, Senator Kornbach, is this going to be an election issue this fall?
Well, I would imagine it would be. Certainly, the last time I was up for election 2 years ago, I heard a lot about water quality as I went door-to-door in Ames. And what I heard from people was that they wanted us to implement the Iowa Land and Water and Land Legacy Trust. Back 6 years ago, the voters approved by 63% margin a constitutional amendment that said the next time we increase the sales tax, 3/8 of a penny should go to water quality and other conservation-related issues. You want to talk about having a conversation with the voters? They have spoken loud and clear on that. 63% is a massive landslide majority.
I agree with you that water quality is probably going to be an issue this fall. But what about this local option sales tax for schools? What about the SAVE fund that Representative Winschittle is implying that should be taken to the voters in the fall election?
Well, I certainly think that education is going to be a key issue. It pretty much always has been. Every time I've been out campaigning, I hear a lot about education. And I think that the overall lack of adequate funding for education is indeed going to be a key issue. The allowable growth this year at 2.25%, the failure of the House 6 years in a row to obey the law at passing allowable growth timely, I think that's got a lot of people really riled up. And I expect that a lot of candidates are going to hear about that this fall.
Senator, I respect that we're on different sides on some of this education funding, but keep in mind the House has sent over a bill in a reasonable, responsible time frame within the confines of the law in order to address supplemental state aid.
Not this year, you haven't.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Mr. Ahart, Superintendent of Des Moines Public Schools, thanks for joining us. Thank you to Senator Herman Korbach and Representative Matt Winchettle. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Theme music by the River Monks. I'm Joyce Russell. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.